Good evening, and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for August 17th, 2023. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. Our guest today is Kai Huschka, the Executive Director of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. That's CELDEF, C-E-L-D-F. He authored a piece published on Truthout a few weeks ago titled "Corporate Suppression of Direct Democracy Fuels Fight for Community Rights." Well, that caught our attention, and we haven't discussed community rights or CELDEF for some years here on the program. So today's a good time to discuss the specifics of how corporations are suppressing direct democracy and the general state of the community rights movement. Kai has been working for 15 years with community rights groups in the western United States, including Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Washington. He was a principal member of Envision Spokane, which proposed the very first Community Bill of Rights in 2009, and a subsequent Worker Bill of Rights and Voter Bill of Rights. Kai is a lecturer for CELDEF's Democracy School, which we'll talk about a little later in the program, and a board member of the Oregon Community Rights Network. He lives with his family near Spokane, Washington. So let's look at how local governments are blocking ballot initiatives at the behest of corporations. Kai Huschka, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I was very much digging the entry song. In fact, I can recall being in our organization being involved years ago as there was interest to cloud seed up in your area to feed, you know, the rainwater to the reservoirs that would then feed the hydraulic dam system. So when the guy mentioned, you know, owning the rain
that falls on the sky.
Of those actions are, you know, it's not just for nice song lyrics. It's, you know, it's the truth.
Mm-hmm. And a tip of the hat to the musician there. That's David Rovics, who is from the Portland area and was about to be here, or maybe it was just over on the coast.
Yeah, he was on the coast a couple of days ago.
It was just days ago, yeah. So I hope some people enjoyed him over there. So this article you did, as I said, caught our attention. It's how local governments are blocking ballot initiatives at the behest of corporations. And I thought we should start with a few examples, which are a bit of an outrage of what is going on in a few different locations where, again, it's, you know, corporations and the governments they influence versus the people, starting with Tacoma, Washington, a few years back.
Yeah, each community has its own unique stories, but, you know, as you probably have covered over your years doing the program and just, you know, your own activist background, you know, they have kind of the same script. So in Tacoma, it was a situation where a large corporation was looking at siting a methanol plant. So there was interest to set up these methanol plants in the Northwest. This was slated to be the largest methanol plant in the world. For those that know, methanol is a product used in making plastics, and they'll use natural gas in order to create some of the elements there that then feed their way into the plastic productions. And in doing so, they would use enormous amounts of water. I mean, we're talking, I think the projection was up to 14 million gallons of water a day were going to be proposed to be used for this methanol production. And when people heard that, they kind of just scratched their head and said, what? Why would you use that much water for that kind of activity? It just did not calculate. So there was a lot of good organizing that happened, a lot of mobilization, but as we've also experienced and seen, you know, the system's really designed to allow these things to move forward. And so we had started to work with a group there that wasn't buying that. And so they had formed their own initiative effort with a really kind of slick proposal, which is just to say, hey, this is going to affect our community. This is going to affect the ecosystems we're a part of. You know, shouldn't we have final say? And that was really the crux of their initiatives, to say if there were certain large scale water projects, we needed to have the right to say yes or no. And so that was the ballot measure. They very quickly gathered their 17 plus thousand signatures, you know, did their due diligence to get it on the ballot. And their reward was a lawsuit by corporate interests mm-hmm. and government itself to say, well, no, we don't think the people should even consider this kind of a question. Therefore, we're going to take you to court and try to block it from being voted on. And unfortunately, there have been other attempts in places like Bellingham and Spokane to also sort of move this community rights frame of, you know, who decides. Mm-hmm. And corporate interests had used the courts in those cases as well to knock ballot measures off in those particular communities. And it was in the Spokane instance where it rose to the state Supreme Court level, where the state Supreme Court basically said, you know, local initiatives are not a right. They're a privilege. And if there's anything that smells that it might sort of question who has authority over something, meaning if the state looks to have authority over the local, then we're not going to even let you vote on it. And so that was really the case built against Tacoma to say, well, we don't even believe you should have the democratic right to consider these kinds of questions. Therefore, we're going to block it from being voted on. And that was the unfortunate result in Tacoma. The good thing is the methanol operation didn't cite there, but the reality that if you're a community that wants to bring important questions forward in a political arena, corporate interests and governments that really work for them are using the courts to block the political process. Because remember, a ballot initiative is not a law. It's really a political question. So therefore, the courts really shouldn't be there. If something passes and someone wants to challenge the legality or the constitutionality of it, so be it. But if we're blocking even the consideration of the evolution of what we want our laws to look like, that's a pretty dangerous precedent to be setting. And unfortunately, it's spread to other places as well, not just Washington State.
Mm-hmm. And that was the Supreme Court then in Washington.
Correct. The state Supreme decision. Court. Yeah. Unanimously made this the distinction that anything looks to exceed the authority of the local government, it's not to be considered basically by the voters. The state has a constitutional right to state initiative, mm-hmm. so they differentiated and in essence made local government really a second-class citizen, and really basically said, we're going to allow legal analysis before something's even a law. And therefore, if someone wants to bring challenge, they can. That's the status right now in Washington State. And anything sort of colors outside the lines, in this case, people concerned about their water, you know, wouldn't even be able to bring up a new law at the local level that looked like it could challenge, you know, state authority, for instance.
Mm-hmm. So it was not a case over permitting, for example, the people taking their right to decide on the permitting of the plant, but a different legal issue, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the community rights work has been about kind of boiling back, you know, what's the central issue here? And, mm-hmm. Do you want a frack injection well? You know, do you want a large-scale 6,000-head factory farm? Mm-hmm. You know, do you want a Chinese corporation setting up a methanol plant that's going to use 14 million gallons of your water on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. So, you know, some really basic questions, and therefore these laws have been formulated to ask, or basically, ideally, you know, ensconce into their local law the ability for people to say, you know, this is what we want, or this is what we don't want, or this is what we advocate, or this is what we value. Yet, you know, we are blocked, and the direct democracy arena, you know, the initiative arena has become harder and harder mm-hmm. to navigate, largely because, you know, it challenges corporate power. It's the whole reason why the initiative process came to be in the first place, because mm-hmm. People saw that government officials weren't paying attention to the people. Corporations were basically ruling the roost, and they wanted a mechanism to challenge that. But over the years, as people have tried to challenge it, largely corporate interests have eroded that capability of using direct democracy.
So the methanol placed company took itself out, but this denial of the people's rights to their ballot initiative, that remains?
Yeah. Wow. So you had a corporate applicant who chose not to proceed, right? Mm-hmm. As you guys probably have tracked over the years, permitting processes are called that for a reason, because they're about permitting something. And the rules are largely written by the corporate industries themselves. So you know, on one hand, people applaud themselves, as they should, for organizing to sort of object towards the methanol plant coming in. But the system of authorization or permitting itself is still intact, right? Like that whole superstructure still exists. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for methanol plants, of course. It's, you know, for fossil fuel operations, yeah, big ag, big timber. They all have the same sort of script. And even when we sort of politically mobilize and sort of win the day in certain cases, you know, the superstructure is left not only intact, but usually starts to find other ways to grow in power, even when it has tremendous power as it stands. It's like never satisfied, you know, it's sort of driven by its own self-greed and, mm-hmm. and will continue to find ways even through the legal process to reinforce that. So yeah, it's a tough world when we're talking about corporations and democracy.
And another location that you mentioned in your article was Lane County, Oregon. That is the county in central Oregon, which includes the city of Eugene and the location of the University of Oregon. Can you tell us about that example?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, geographically, you know, Willamette Valley, pretty significant ag area, also coastal forest through there. So like a lot of places, you know, has been logged over the years. And as logging practices have become more corporatized, they've also utilized some pretty brutal techniques to do their commodification of our ecosystems, you know, whether it's the mechanization of getting the trees down, you know, or the use of toxic chemicals to choke out any other sort of competing plant life mm-hmm. or even animal life to make sure that their trees grow. That's basically the recipe of timber these days, especially in places like Oregon and Washington and elsewhere. And so people there have mobilized in the community rights frame around, you know, protecting the integrity of the food system and protecting forest ecosystems. And they had two ballot measures, one on regarding aerial spraying of pesticides, which is a common way to disperse the chemicals because a lot of the mountainous areas are quite difficult to get to by foot. So they use helicopters to spray pesticides. You can imagine how inaccurate that can be. Depending on the wind, depending mm-hmm. on the pilot, there's all kinds of issues. And in addition to that, the other interesting ballot measure they had was to solidify or confirm the right of local self-government, you know, the capability of people in the places where they're at making critical decisions about their communities, which seems like a crazy thing to say, because when we look at Article 1, Section 1, just about of every state constitution, it supposedly says we have the political power. Mm-hmm. But when we go to exercise it, you know, where is it? So they had done, again, like the folks in Tacoma, their due diligence to gather their signatures, not easy work, got these things qualified, and then a shill for the corporate timber industry filed lawsuit. And in this case, decided to invoke a provision of review of initiatives that had never been applied to a local initiative before. And ultimately, the court said, yeah, this should probably apply to these types of initiatives. Therefore, one, the review wasn't done. And even if it was done, they don't pass the test of qualifying for what they called, you know, single subject. Mm-hmm. And so those folks decided to run it through the court system from the local up to the appeals court. And eventually, with a lot of actually support through amicus briefs from a lot of different organizations, largely on this question of direct democracy. Like, what's the point if we can't even bring critical questions forward? Why are the courts stepping in? This is not the arena of the courts. So a lot of support from others saying, hey, people should vote on this. When the question got considered by the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court of Oregon, that is, they issued a one sentence response saying, you know, we basically are fine with the decision. You know, we're not going to review it. So as you guys also probably know, and as your listeners know, you know, when it comes to state Supreme Courts and even the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, they can pick and choose the kind of cases they want to hear. Mm-hmm. They decided that, I guess, the people's right to directly legislate wasn't an interesting enough topic to address. And when that happens, you know, those efforts are done. You know, the courts have spoken, the system has spoken, and you're sort of back to the drawing board. And again, the voters, the citizens, denied the capability to really dive into some really critical questions. And in this case, what do our forests look like? What do our timber practices look like? All the evidence of decades of research and analysis from citizen groups and others have shown that these things are deadly yet we keep allowing the legalization of spraying it. And we want it to stop. But, you know, what's our outlets if we can't even consider the questions, let alone enforce the things that we want to enforce through the laws? You can see a pretty devastating erosion of whatever sense of democracy we might have if we can't even democratically consider questions that affect our daily lives.
Mm-hmm. And the third example you mentioned was in Ohio. So can you tell us a little bit about goings on in the state of Ohio on this issue?
Yeah, so Ohio, you know, each region seems to have its own sort of flavor of issues. You know, since the hydraulic fracking boom, places like Pennsylvania and Ohio have been hit pretty hard, both by the drilling, by the frac injection waste dumping, as well as pipeline infrastructure. Because as the industry found a new way to pull natural gas up, it needed new infrastructure. And so it meant basically driving its way into a lot of these communities. And so a lot of our organizing support work from a community rights standpoint has been around the issue of natural gas extraction. And just like Tacoma and just like folks in Lane County, you know, people have looked at the situation and with a sense of real precaution, you know, have evaluated it's not worth it. It's not worth getting these pipelines put in. It's not worth the drilling happening. It's not worth the toxic waste being dumped in our communities. And so in multiple places, largely at the county level in Ohio, they look to also put these questions forward in a political arena, doing the same things as the folks in Tacoma and Lane County did, which was doing the hard work of gathering the signatures. And in their case, they have these boards of elections that have certain power in Ohio. So it's a little different structure than Washington State or Oregon. And so they decided to kind of wield their power to deny these ballot measures from getting on the ballot. And so we had found ourselves, again, entering the legal arena to make the arguments about why they should be voted on. And there's been some mixed opinions coming out of the Ohio Supreme Court, some saying yes, some saying no. So it's really shaky ground. But unfortunately, in a lot of cases, it denied the capability of votes on these things. And I think also it was mentioned in the article and what you may have tracked, you know, Ohio just recently had a vote on making it harder to do state initiatives. That was largely aimed at trying to undermine a vote on reproductive rights coming up in November.
Yes.
It was voted down. So despite the push, despite probably corporate money coming in to try to get that to pass, the people smelled something off and thankfully voted that down. So it's not only attacks, of course, at the local level, but in a lot of places, you know, attacking state initiatives. Anytime something comes up that challenges corporate power, they'll find a way to change the rules of the game, which, you know, largely those rules are their rules. Yet anytime someone tries to gain what they feel like is a little ground or a little power, they snap back hard. And that's what we've seen with these attacks on the local initiative, ballot measure access stuff.
Let me do a quick summary of Ohio. So that was a week ago on Tuesday, I believe it was. And the proposal was to require a 60% instead of 50% vote to pass any initiative at the state level. And it failed by about, I think it was 57 to 43%. So a lot of direct democracy supporters, including us, we're cheering that and the wisdom of the voters in the state of Ohio.
And of course, then, it was the anti-abortion movement that was behind that to prevent the people from being able to allow abortions.
Yes, it was. And then the abortion issue will be on the, I guess that will be an initiative coming up for the November election of this year.
Yeah. So. And another technique that they've used in other places is not only the kind of the supermajority requirement, which interestingly enough is a lot of how the Chilean constitution is organized, again, to be as anti-democratic as possible and to solidify corporate power. But another thing they do is they require that signatures be gathered in every either district or county or designation.
Oh, yes.
You know, so it's another thing to say, okay, it's not enough that you can get it, let's say, from the most populated zones. You've got to get it from everywhere kind of thing. Again, putting even more burden on.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, you know, when it's citizen driven, citizen groups don't have money. Of course, when the corporate guys want to do something, like in the state of Washington, you know, they wanted to privatize liquor. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was all kinds of money through their initiative process. Liquor got privatized.
I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah, but anytime citizens want to push something, you know, it's we got to kind of scrape for pennies. And then, of course, making the process so untenable, it's all aimed at making sure that the voice of the people is muffled or ideally silenced.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned to listeners, we're talking with Kai Hushka about the general trend in corporations influencing local governments to make ballot initiatives all the harder to pass or even get on a ballot. And we'll be taking calls from the public in about 5 minutes or so. If you want to call in, it's 895-2448. But please hold off till the bottom of the hour. One of the other examples that's going on that's related in, but on a different topic is the infamous Cop City controversy in Atlanta, Georgia. Could you tell us a little about goings on there?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the examples we've been talking about, you know, people would probably put into an environmental category. But here you have an instance of an issue that's kind of a convergence of both, right? The mm-hmm. people protecting the ecosystem for the proposed training center, as well as just others looking at, you know, how has policing been formulated in this country, and mm-hmm. in this case, specifically in Atlanta. And, you know, strong objections to continuing the trend as it's kind of always been, and a lot of the direct action resistance that had gone on. And as another element, of course, people said, well, what else can we do? And so they put this initiative forward. And now, like in Tacoma and in Ohio and Oregon, there's a challenge to try to keep the vote from happening on the measure regarding whether or not the citizens can decide whether we want this or not. Mm-hmm. Again, we're told continuously, and perhaps you guys have tracked this almost on a daily basis, you know, how many times is democracy mentioned, especially by our esteemed politicians? or, of course, anything globally speaking, you know, our position is always defenders of democracy, or something happens, it's democracy this, democracy that. But in our own places, when we go to actually practice something akin to democracy, we found that we're told we can't. And I think that our view is we need more people to understand that as a means to maybe begin to change that. And I think that's the another situation there in Atlanta with Cop City is, again, people trying to exercise their direct democracy rights, the direct legislative rights, and having that be obstructed versus let's have these discussions. Let's mix it up. You know, how else are we supposed to evolve in our sense of community and place and one another and protecting the things that we think need protecting if we can't even debate them? In the political arena, we've seen, of course, the tremendous influence of the corporate form to sway how people vote. In California there a few years ago, like it was in Oregon and Washington, you know, these GMO labeling laws that came up, and you looked at the polling information in advance of the vote and it was, you know, off the charts. Yep, we want labeling. And then when the vote comes in, it goes down. Why? Because corporations have spent millions of dollars to sway opinion away from what people actually subscribe to. So I don't think we've gotten used to it. Hopefully we haven't, around the ability of corporations to sway elections. What's even more troublesome, I think, what we see is, you know, we have corporations now deciding if you get to vote at all, which mm-hmm. is really the basic bottom line here, right? Mm-hmm. We don't like this, so we're going to find ways to make sure you don't get to vote at all, let alone try to influence your vote. So it's sort of next level autocratic power that's being wielded. At the same time, you know, we keep being told that we're defenders of democracy.
I think the corporations did everybody one better in a couple little towns in Delaware, where they were able to wrangle the right for a corporation to vote.
Yeah, think about that.
Well, yeah, it was the logical conclusion of the thinking of such corporate dominance. And we're going to try and address that in a future program in the coming months. But that is something that my guess most listeners have not heard about that. But in the state of, I think it's Delaware?
Delaware.
In Delaware, there's a locality, it's a city or one of the counties, that is trying to pass a law to allow actual corporations to vote. So I wanted to change the topic here a little bit to some success stories. And, of course, here in Mendocino County, We were put on the map nationally going back, it's 19 years, 19 and a half years, to the infamous Measure H campaign in the very early months of 2004, which culminated in March of that year, at which time we became the first county in the U.S. to ban the growing of GMOs. And that was an initiative campaign at the time, and it stuck. It is the law. We were not preempted by the state, although the state did pass a law after that which required any future such campaigns to be approved by the state agriculture commissioner. And I might not have worded that exactly right, because it's not clear to me if the ag commissioner has to agree that something even goes to the people or agree to it after it passes. That little detail, I'm not sure. But, and by the way, I hope to have a program on the 20th anniversary in March of next year for listeners that would like to hear some of that again. We'll be talking about that probably in March of next year. But then there is the famous and a long-term marathon going in Grant Township, Pennsylvania. So can you tell us some of the better news that I think has come out of Grant Township in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. I'm going to make one quick comment on the GMO situation. You know, mm-hmm. It's fantastic that the mobilization happened, and you know that it's the law sits, and you know the thing of which it defined that it couldn't happen has not happened. So that's tremendous. Mm-hmm. The technique, though, to say we're going to carve out the capability there, but basically nowhere else. That's also another technique the industry will use. So. In Oregon, the same thing happened where you had a particular county ban GMOs. Next thing you know, after the vote approving it, they passed new state preemption law that made it very explicit that no agricultural seed regulation, banning, anything of the sorts can be done at the local level. That's a state authority. Mm-hmm. But then carved out one particular county, the one that had the vote already, as being sort of okay to have. So
Okay. Interesting.
So it's both sort of applauding what we've done, but then the question always is, can you replicate this? That's mm-hmm. always should be the question. Mm-hmm. And if you can't, then we still have the systems problem, right? It'd be one thing where you could do it, and then I can do it, and then someone else can do it, and no one's going to stop us. That starts to be sort of the evolution of really democratic power and people yeah. power and community power. And so I think it's about balancing, you know, the localized, let's say, wins, but then understanding systemically, where do we really sit? So that would be kind of one thing I would offer around the example you gave.
With Measure H also, it's the county jurisdiction prohibits it, but you could still grow it technically, legally within a city jurisdiction within the county. So we didn't win it all, but we won a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those are important steps, right? Because we need to be sort of positively fed in order to kind of keep up the work that needs to be kept up here. And so those are important steps. Mm-hmm. And I think Grant Township is an example of that. I mean, it's a tremendous story of what we would define as sort of community resistance and community resilience. And it's come through a lot of different forms, including really exercising those community rights to say, you know, we have a right to decide what we want, and we have a right to decide in their particular case to say no to being another sacrifice zone like so many communities. And in their case, it was about the dumping of waste from the hydraulic fracturing process, because when they drill, they have to do something with the waste product. And so they seek out places to dump this, often into old wells, mm-hmm. Which the integrity of those wells are very questionable. Those wells punch their way thousands of feet into the ground and through the water table. And if you can imagine you're in a rural community that pulls all your water from the ground, you're probably going to scratch your head going, that doesn't seem to make sense. And so this is a 9-10 year ordeal for 8-year ordeal for the folks of Grant Township to sort of stand their ground. They did it primarily through, you know, the community rights lawmaking method, mm-hmm. even to the point where they got the state permitting agency to pull the state permits for the well itself after the community had passed a community rights law saying we ban it, mm-hmm. which was very interesting to see a locality. And we're talking a 700 person township.
Yeah, this is tiny, but they're determined. All the more too.
And so to actually get the state environmental agency to sort of pause to the point where they actually pulled permits. Now, the interesting thing is they pulled the permits, but not too long after that, it was the state agency or the state itself that sued the locality for having higher environmental laws than the state basically authorized. So they were going after the community for protecting their environment to a stronger level than the state mm-hmm. had been doing in other places. Mm-hmm. I mean, the irony there is quite laughable if it wasn't so serious.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the corporate interest that wants to do the waste, you know, took the town to task on lawsuits. You know, they attacked our organizations with sanctions against the attorneys to try to get things to buckle. Despite all the tremendous pressure, you know, they have stood their ground in a very sort of, you know, loving way, but very sort of warrior-like way. The people in that community say that, no, we're not going away. We don't want this. We don't want it for us. We don't want it for the ecosystem. There's a great film that got made about their effort called Hellbent, which is about their community effort, but also understanding that they're part of an ecosystem, or they're in an ecosystem where the Hellbender, East Run Hellbender Salamander lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was about protecting another one of your neighbors, in this case, from the poisoning. And so despite the tremendous amount of lawsuits, the ongoing lawsuits, we found out a couple months ago that the state had notified the corporate interest that there were problems with the well casing, and the corporation has decided that they were going to plug the well, meaning abandon the project,
mm-hmm.
Which has happened. The well has been plugged, and there is no frac injection waste coming to Grant Township. And it came because the people banded together, had a message, stood strong. You know, they even got to the point where they adopted a law locally that authorized nonviolent direct action to defend themselves against the frac injection wastewater. So basically saying, if we're doing this based on the rights that we've asserted, that we've adopted through law here, we can't be prosecuted, mm-hmm. which is about attacking the notion that so many activists do the right thing, and then they get punished for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was about turning that on its head, because they understood where this was all going. And so it's a pretty fantastic and amazing story. And the people there will tell you it doesn't stop with Grant Township. It needs to continue with Grant Township, meaning mm-hmm. other communities need to stand strong against these corporate invasions that are state sanctioned, right? Because it's not the corporation running on its own. It's running off of the permission of laws authorized either by the state or federal government.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
So it is the corporate state that's operating here. It's not the corporation by itself. And mm-hmm. that's often what we try to get people to understand, is there is an organized collusion here of powerful interests that are being forced into our communities against our will. And we're being told there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. And these people held together for a long time, right? They didn't succeed overnight. How long did this take?
No, eight some years.
Wow.
You know, again, a town of 700 people. And as you can imagine, all the meetings, all the media, all the moments
yeah.
of conflict, all the ups, the downs, there they are. Like I said, you should really watch Hellbent. There's a mother and daughter who are principals in this effort that are featured in that film from Grant Township. And they really are just amazing human beings. But I think human beings that are like human beings anywhere in this country. And, you know, we have to sort of look to one another, I think, is sort of the bottom line, because systemically we're under attack. And it's going to be up to us to change that, to have the confidence to believe we can change it. Because if we do, I think change can happen quickly. That's my assessment. But I think we're often sort of doubting our capabilities. The system's very good at trying to punish us. But if we can get past that, as the communities we've seen that we've worked with over the years, there's real potential there to really have a sea change towards, you know, having communities be what they want, having democracy actually exist in the way that we thought it would exist already or has existed already,
mm-hmm.
you know, to actually be part of our ecosystems, not dominators of it. You know, all those things are feasible, but we got to believe it's possible.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned a headline out of the Indiana County Gazette in May of this year. That's the county in Pennsylvania in which the Grant Township exists. And the headline is simply, "Waste Well to be Plugged in Grant Township." And then in there is a few quotes, and it's from the, oh my goodness, now what's the organization called in Grant to township escapes me for the moment.
They have a great name that could be the name for like a motorcycle gang, but it's the East Run Hellbenders.
That's after the salamander. Well, here's a few quotes. It says, to date, not a single drop of frack waste has been injected within the township. And another quote, nearly a decade of efforts by township residents. That's what it took. And the Commonwealth Court invalidated the charter that Grant Township passed in 2015. So they took some hits on this thing. They lost some things, some battles, but in the long run, they won the war. And the Township Board of Supervisors was taken to court repeatedly over those years. But yep. They still eventually won the battle, and the well was plugged.
So there's this big overriding question here, which is, can we organize effectively to break corporate rule? And Kai, I think you've been just giving us some pretty good examples of how it can be. There's a lot with your group, ZELDEF, I think that you're being very persuasive here.
And by the way, we are talking with Kai Huschka of ZELDEF. That's the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And we're talking about how local governments are blocking ballot initiatives at the behest of corporations. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give a call here with any questions or comments. The number is 895-2448 and, of course, in area code 707.
So, what you mentioned is a second ago there, Annie, our assessment after we've been around since 95, so we've seen a few things. I think we're at a point now where it's really this emphasis needed on community power. I mean, it's always been that. Largely, though, it's been sort of formulated within these lawmaking efforts. I think there's feasibility still to sort of stand your ground through the lawmaking realm, but it has to get more expansive, bringing in citizen assembly work, bringing in higher amounts of mutual aid, bringing in higher degrees of protest when your community is under threat, you know, building a multifaceted movement, basically, or resistance is necessary, which is going to require different groups, different people really working with one another. And I think that's a big sort of missing piece in our capability of toppling corporate rule is we got to link arms. You know, we can't sort of be stratified like I'm doing environmental stuff and you're doing economic stuff and you're doing civil rights stuff, or this person's doing hard direct action and I'm doing, you know, this advocacy work is somehow separate. Somehow we've got to bring that all under the kind of the same roof and sort of understand there's going to be ranges of capabilities. It's a necessity in essence to sort of support one another in that way. Even if we may not do elements of it, supporting that full gamut of the capability of the people unifying in that movement kind of way, that's where the real power is going to come. And so we're definitely in the realm of building that energy towards what we'd call our partner advisor committee, and really partnering up with people that have different expertise, different linkages, you know, so that as we work with community, there's more to offer than what we've experienced so far, that it becomes broader. And I think that's what actually has the staying power to get beyond just isolated wins for real sort of systemic change.
Well, people, are they mad enough to do it? I mean, you can always go get a slice and a video and then forget about everything. Are we going to do it?
That, I think, is the big question, right? Like, where are we? And it is a question that I wrestle with almost on a daily basis. You know, what is it going to take to have that fire, right? I mean, you need a sense of outrage, a sense of something. And then ideally it gets organized in an effective way to really do something about it. And I don't know 100%. I see it at moments, but of course, any sort of people's effort is hard to maintain because it's an asymmetrical situation, right? It's from a power dynamic. The others have tremendous amount of power to sort of change, again, the rules of the game, as we were talking about around the ballot access, you know, to influence sort of people's mindset and pull them away from what they actually really believe in. All kinds of mechanisms, you know, to isolate us, you know, to label people as realists or idealists, you know, and isolate them from the radicals because you don't want the radicals because those are the systems people. You know, so there's all kinds of things happening and all kinds of forces. But interestingly enough, I was just in a meeting with folks in coastal Oregon around timber practices again. And there was a different tenor around hearing that the system is not there for them. So they actually got it from the state agencies. You know, they're hearing it from the elected officials saying, oh, it's just the way it is. And then people saying, well, we don't buy it. And I think that's a good starting point. We'll see if they've got the energy to maintain it. But, you know, those are the moments. So when we do have the COP cities show up or wherever it is, you know, there's got to be that cross-regional, cross-country solidarity that hopefully feeds the energy where we're at. So, but I think your question is the big question, you know, can we get fired up enough to actually mobilize to do really the big systems work? I think we've had bits and pieces. There's things there, but there's more work to be done, but we'll see.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, I appreciate the work that you and CELDEF are doing, and it resonates here with in Mendocino County, where Judy Berry was one of our great political thinkers, and she calls it revolutionary ecology and argues that you have to do what you were saying, bring all these issues together. They're not really separated. It's the same fight.
And you mentioned starting in 1995. That's when CELDEF was begun?
Correct.
Okay. I've forgotten it had been quite that long. So, well, let's talk a little about the big picture, you know, community rights, and when did it get started? I mean, was the CELDEF then, you know, the first to dedicate itself to this kind of environmental law and fundamental community rights?
Yeah, I mean, it's been sort of an evolution. Like, I think we're into sort of what I would call our third chapter. Mm-hmm. Originally, we were an organization set up to utilize, we thought, the existing environmental legal structure to help communities help the environment, right? So that the permit fights that everyone knows about. Mm-hmm. So we were one of those. You know, we would get these calls, and it was also sort of a pledge of ours that we would be there as a resource without fee, because, of course, a lot of issues people want to get representation from a legal perspective, but you know, they don't have the money.
Yeah,
and so this was about trying to be an actual community resource. And we've been able to maintain that through largely through donations, whether it's been small donations or major donors or foundations. But it's still what feeds us today. You know, the funding from other arenas helps us do the work we've done in the Tacomas and Lane counties and places in Ohio and Grant Township. But we did sort of conventional environmental work for about 7-8 years and stopped doing it largely at the behest of the communities we were working with, because they're like, well, the thing's still happening. It's still getting permitted. So despite your capability to call into question, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 rounds of the permit application, eventually the thing gets completed correctly. And, you know, the corporate entity gets their permit. You know, mm-hmm. we thought this would stop it. And of course, it's called a permitting process for a reason. And it was really, you know, by the pushing and the analysis of communities itself that we entered into what we call the community rights world today, which is we need to start asserting something of which we thought existed, which is our capability to be democratic, our capability to sort of self-determine, the idea that we should be able to control the corporate entity for the good of the community, not be under its thumb. And that started really early 2000s. And, you know, we spent the last 20 some years in that realm of really, again, trying to fire people up, to your question earlier, Annie, like, isn't that outrageous? You know, whether it's in your community, the one next door, you know, six states over, it's, we're all under that same structure, again, regardless of the issue. And that's been kind of one of the hardest things to get through, is it's all under that same superstructure. Regardless of what you may be passionate about or an advocate for, it's all running into the same thing. And if we can see that, maybe we can collectively do something about it. And so that was sort of the thinking in the sense of the work we were doing with communities, again, largely to protect the interests of the communities. When I say communities, not just the people, but of course the ecosystems, you know, the East Run salamander or whatever it may be. And I think the switch came probably about 3-4 years ago now, where we were seeing that, you know, just moving things through the lawmaking arena, which then largely were now finding their ways into the courts, was not creating that outrage or that energy. It was actually dissipating it. Because once things enter the arena of the courts, you're again largely entering the corporate world. And so despite our efforts to make the arguments that we need a different governmental existence, you know, things like precedence, things like preemption, things like corporate constitutional rights, all those things have real weight against denying that capability of really evolving towards a true democracy. And so in a movement kind of way, you either stay with what you're doing and probably eventually die off, or you have to change your analysis and start adding in more potential for that transformational work that isn't just in, let's say, the lawmaking arena. And so that's where we sit now, which is a lot of investigation into really what we would call alternative systems. You know, mm-hmm. how are people developing their capabilities outside the so-called dominant system? And the great thing is there's good examples out there. The question is, how do we organize it away? How do we transfer it in a way? How do we get people prepared enough in a way? And I think ultimately for me, my view is, how do people get confident enough to understand that they've got the capability? And of course, we see it very often in disasters, right? Whether it's wildfires or snowstorms or whatnot, we see community happen, you know, in an instant often, which is a fantastic thing. So could we be doing this on a more regular basis? Because the reality is, in so many instances, the system is not even designed to be there for us, or it's inefficient enough that it can't deliver what we think it should be able to. So it's going to rely on us. And that's not just in a natural disaster kind of environment. It's really every day. And so I think we're in that realm of fostering that confidence level and bringing in other partners as the coalition to begin to really do community level movement work in a more expansive way than it's been in the community rights frame. And so that's mm-hmm. that's kind of the evolution and trajectory that we're on, that we think has that power, again, to get back to your question, Annie, which I appreciate, which is, you know, what's going to fire us up? And I think it's that unification, knocking down that fracturing that exists, that the system deliberately fractures us with, and really getting us to build community, you know, build those relationships, find those universal values to work from. And within that, there is power, because clearly in our own history, we've done things before in that people movement oriented way to change things very significantly. We're capable, is how I still see it, despite the ease of getting, you know, online to watch your streaming movie and have your slice of pizza. As
Well, there's a certain attitude that goes with your perspective, too, which is that we're not just going to have allowable amounts of toxins. I, as a human being, have a right not to have them spread any toxins. So that you're kind of coming at it from the whole opposite of the corporate snake. not to say bad things about snakes.
I'm glad. Yeah, don't demean the snakes. Yeah. No, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the crux. Asking a different question, which is exactly what you just framed, which is often the question we think we can ask is, well, what's the best we can do, or what can we get, or what are our options? That's usually what the framework sort of boxes us in. But to ask the question, or to say, we don't want any poisons, or we don't want this, or we do want whatever it is, you know, we want a sustainable agricultural system that isn't corporatized and using pesticides and genetically modified seed. Why shouldn't that be the question we ask? And why shouldn't that drive the movement building? Mm-hmm. And I think that is the very thing that we have yet to really collectively on a large scale get comfortable with. But that's the very thing that we need to, because we've seen it. Once people do that, that's why Grand Township was successful, because they asked that. They said, we don't want one drop of your toxic waste, let alone how much is, you know, allowable by regulations, yeah. which is always the terminology, right? As if, you know, nature is that easy. You can just figure it out and say this much in the air, this much in the water, this much in the ground. And, you know, we have to stop being bamboozled.
We have 5 minutes to go in the program. I want to mention again to listeners that we're speaking with Kai Hushka as the executive director of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. That's CELDEF. And anyone with any questions or comments is welcome to call here at 895-2448. And Kai, I want to make sure we cover one topic before it gets too late here. And that's that you will be speaking along with a few colleagues this week, or next week, I'm sorry, in California. So can you tell us about the two stops you're going to be making on a speaking tour?
We wish we had more time to come visit you guys up in Mendocino County there. Nice. Unfortunately, it's a short trip. We will be in Los Angeles on August 21st at a location called ArtShare LA.
That's Monday the 21st?
August 21st, Monday, August 21st. Mm-hmm. And then two nights later, August 23rd, we'll be in Oakland at a place called Omni Commons. And if people go to celldef.org, you'll find a link to the events themselves and all the pertinent information.
Okay. celldef.org.
Yep. Correct. So myself and another colleague, Chad Nicholson, who's our director of community resistance and resilience, and then one of our partner advisors, fantastic woman, Camila Vergara, who's written a book called Systemic Corruption, which dives into really the constitutional construct, has done a lot of work on constitutional analysis and really this idea of where is the democracy, is also from Chile. So she was involved a lot in the effort last year as that country was considering a new constitution that had, you know, worker rights enshrined, mm-hmm. you know, reproductive rights enshrined, rights of nature enshrined, lots of amazing constitutional provisions. Unfortunately, the central government and corporate interests found a way to deter the yes vote on it. But she's joining us as well. So we're going to have a pretty engaging, provocative conversation about things like the constitution and other things around movement building.
Okay, we'll slip in one call here. Caller, you're live on the air. What's your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Tim up here in Willits.
Uh-huh.
Just to tie a bow on it, I know you have very little time left.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the show. I appreciate the idealism. And to answer the question of where is everybody? Why isn't there more aggregation? I think it's a question of militancy, the absence of militancy, and what I hear you're doing is what I would call resoluteness, and it's a fine line, but the way that groups are vilified and making it not worth joining them, kind of, it's because they're branded as militant, and okay. This is an ongoing struggle to keep it clean.
Yeah. Well, let's see what Kai has to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
And we are
out of
time.
We just have a couple of minutes. Yeah, so let me mention the subtitle of this tour. It's American Delusion, How Dignity and Disobedience Are the Keys to Transforming into a Democracy.
Yeah, so we only have seconds left.
Well,
so,
one minute left.
So maybe we should get the phone number and the website and the email contacts for Kai here so our listeners can get involved.
And you mentioned CELDEF, so celdef.org.
Yeah, and if people want to get a hold of me directly, email is just kai@celdef.org.
Okay.
Let me mention how much I enjoyed reading the blogs and the press releases there at the website, because it gives you a good history of what's been going on, certainly in recent years, and certainly a worthwhile read. So, well, Kai Hushka, thank you for being our guest for the day. Been a very, very good update we did. And we don't have time to talk about some of the other good news about the people winning things, like in Montana.
Yay!
But we're celebrating that on our own. So thanks for being our guest and taking that call from a listener.
Thanks for having me tonight. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Corporations and Democracy, broadcast on third Thursdays from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KZYX and Z. Join us for the next edition of Corporations and Democracy. That'll be September 21st. That'll be the Equinox special edition featuring the 25th anniversary of Corporations and Democracy with numerous hosts from years in the past. For further information about what you can do to correct the corporate dominance of our democracy, go to www.thealliancefordemocracy.org. Thanks for listening.